This is Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold in for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, we'll look at Governor Walker's plan announced today to replace the Affordable Care Act.
It takes tremendous physical and mental strength and focus to become an Army Ranger. This Friday, for the first time, two women will be among those who completed the rigorous training. Not only does this move the U.S. Army closer to meeting the upcoming 2016 deadline for opening combat roles to female soldiers, it also provides women with more opportunities for promotion into leadership positions.
We're going to find out how these new women Army Rangers fit into the larger context and also what it takes to be part of that elite force.
First, we're joined by Gail Sumac-Lumen. Gail is on the Council for Foreign Relations Senior Fellow for Women in Foreign Policy. She's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Ashley's War, the untold story of team of women soldiers on the Special Ops Battlefield. Gail, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Now, what's the history of women in the U.S. military? It's a broad place to start, but let's begin there.
Yeah, sure, we can start there. I mean, women have served in every war the United States has fought, and you really see women have served in wax and waves, and everybody has had an auxiliary corps that really began World War II, Vietnam, and Korea, and then they always, however, have been banned from ground combat. And the Gulf War, you started to see the first Gulf War, 40,000 women deployed, and by this last decade of war, roughly 300,000 women have deployed.
But not in combat.
To Iraq and Afghanistan. But they have been in combat, because the thing is, the reality has well surpassed the regulation. Officially, women were banned from ground combat. In reality, as Ashley's War is a story of a team of women soldiers recruited by special operations to go on Army Ranger and Navy SEAL night raids in 2011, while the combat ban was very much in place. And it was perfectly legal, but the reason why it was legal is because women were attached rather than assigned to these units. And
right.
So women have been seeing war for years. We're just now, as a country, catching up with what's already been happening on the battlefield because the battlefield demanded it.
No, help me out with the attached rather than assigned. What does that mean?
Right. That was what the lawyers and Special Operations Command really did find. It was a perfectly legal finding that women could not officially be Rangers or SEALs, but they could be out on those missions supporting them the way that the explosive ordnance device guys in Hurt Locker did. And Ashley's War was really a look inside who these women are who wanted to go inside the Rangers world, inside SEALs world, and really go out there every night and make a difference on that mission. And I think they have much in common with these young women who came after them who are graduating from Ranger School this Friday, which is, you know, they were not there to prove a point. They were all there to serve with purpose and be at the center of whatever it was that the United States military asked of them.
Now, what have been some of the common arguments? I mean, it's obvious that it appears that women have been in combat operations in some ways, but what have been the big common arguments against them formally serving in combat?
Sure.
Alongside of
and against them becoming SEALs and Rangers or infantrymen in their own right. I mean, I think the arguments are preparedness, physical strength, unit cohesion, and not very many women will be able to do this work. And the biggest one always comes down to culture. And will it change combat readiness? Will it change the way people, military leaders, make decisions? And it's interesting because the people who are sort of most eloquent on that when I talk to them are Rangers who have already deployed. And it's not that they universally are in favor of, you know, opening all opportunities to women, but they've seen soldiers who happen to be female make a difference on combat operations. You know, there are moments in Ashley's War where it's information on the objective, on the night raid, that women soldiers learn, that ends up avoiding an ambush or helping to learn where IEDs are between, you know, one compound and another. So I think it's all about, you know, do you have a fighting force that has the best people in the right job?
Now, and that was one of the things that you point out in the book, and you kind of mentioned that a little bit, is that the female soldiers involved in the operations you talk about in Ashley's War were able to get information that the men just weren't able to get.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a scene in Ashley's War where, you know, an infantry officer, an intel officer, is talking to the women in the house. She's doing on a raid with the Rangers, and her count of how many men, women, and children are in the home reveals to the Rangers that they're missing a person, and the person they're missing is waiting, lying in wait to ambush them the moment they enter the compound. So, you know, that kind of information. There's another night where Sarah, who's a military police officer, you know, she finds out that the person they're looking for is, you know, one house over. And that kind of information then goes to the Rangers. The Rangers corroborate it, and it saves everybody a whole lot of work and heartache and gets their mission accomplished safely and more quickly. And I think if you talk to Rangers, these guys have seen 14 years of war. At this point, all people were looking for was a solution and people who could make a difference. And I think the story of Ashley's war is really about a team that was recruited, trained, and deployed by special operations in 2011 to go make a difference on the battlefield every night. And that's what these women set out to do.
So what were the things you learned from talking to the women involved in that? Or what were...
I learned so much because I had no idea that women, you know, as much as I'd covered Afghanistan, but I certainly didn't know that women were out on these really dangerous and very important combat operations right there alongside Rangers and SEALs. And, you know, they had really funny stories. You know, they're incredibly funny and, you know, very feminine each in their own way and very fierce. And, you know, I think so many times the portrayals of women in war are one-dimensional. And here were women who looked, you know, they would always be asked if they were a softball team or nurses when they were all together, because so rarely do we see, you know, 20 women in uniform, all incredibly fit young women as a group. And
right,
so,
right.
You know, one night, you know, one of them told me a story about SEALs who were really skeptical about what she could do and why they had to take her out on a mission with them. And then the intel item they were looking for was wrapped up in a baby's wet diaper that she found.
Wow. So, and this is another thing, because, I mean, you're in your book and in a lot of discussions around this, there's a lot of pointing at the outstanding nature of women who are in the military and the accomplishment they make. But there's also an element of this where they just want to be treated like everybody else and would prefer not to be. Not to be, you know, held up as an example. I think that that's even been the response to the Rangers to this.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. You talk to people who are close to the two women who've just completed Ranger School, and the first thing they'll tell you is they do not want this level of scrutiny. They understand they're first, but they never asked for this. All they wanted was to do their best and to get through Ranger School and to be the best soldiers that they could be. You know, it was never about serving in anybody's agenda. It was always about serving with purpose for all of these young women.
Now, in 2013, Leon Panetta set a deadline to remove obstacles to women serving in combat positions. Do you think opinions have changed within and outside of the military establishment since that decision and because of experiences like what you talk about in Ashley's War?
Well, it's interesting. I talked to Secretary Panetta last evening for a piece I just wrote, and what is so interesting is that he's incredibly proud, but he's the first one to say the regulation was so far behind the battlefield reality. I mean, these young women in Ashley's War were not recruited for a social program in 2011 by special operations. They were recruited to fill a security gap that only they could fill. And so I think that from Secretary Panetta's perspective and other leaders, the regulation caught up with reality. And now we are seeing a chance for women who only wanted the opportunity to meet the same standards that men meet to have that moment where they are getting to test themselves in service to their country. And that's really all it is. I know it's an incredible story, and it is history. But I was talking to a ranger, a sergeant major who leads this ranger training, and he said, look, it's going to be a graduation like any other for people who earn the tab, period.
Well, Gail, thanks for joining us today on Central Time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Gail Sumach-Lemon. She's she's on the Council of Foreign Relations. She's a senior fellow for women in foreign policy. She's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Ashley's War, the untold story of a team of women soldiers on the special ops battlefield.
Coming up, we'll continue this conversation with the president of the U.S. Army Rangers Association. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Mike Arnold. We'd like to hear from you. Have you served in the Rangers or in another elite combat force? Are you a woman who served in the military? Do you think that gender plays as large a role as being well-trained and mentally and physically prepared? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Before the news, we talked about the changing landscape of women in the military, especially in light of the first female soldiers to successfully complete Army Ranger training. You can join us now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think women's role in the military should be moving forward?
But first, we're going to get a look at exactly what that training entails. Travis West is a Madison attorney specializing in commercial litigation and veterans' disabilities claims. He's also the president of the U.S. Army Rangers Association and a former Army Ranger. Welcome to Central Time. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, before we get into the details of what it takes to be a Ranger, what's your reaction to this?
Well, this is an event that has been a long time coming. The decision to integrate women into units in the military and into schools in the military where they haven't been permitted to go before was made several years ago. The process to allow them to attend Ranger School began this past year, and so we had three RTAC classes in which we got to observe the efforts. And obviously, there have been several restarts within the school system itself before we got to this point. And so the Ranger community has known that this may happen, and now it's come to be. And so there haven't really been too many surprises, but obviously the last few days there's been a lot of very vocal people about it.
Now let's talk a little bit about what it takes to be an Army Ranger. I mean, you appear to be a very fit man, but it sounds like this is like a pretty serious thing that you have to go through to do this training. Could you explain that to us a little bit?
Sure. So the one thing to keep in mind is that there's a distinction between attending the Army Ranger School and serving in one of the Army units or in the Ranger Regiment,
right,
as
right.
Gail was talking about earlier. So the school takes in individuals who serve in other units in the military in all sorts of different capacities. And so they may take in combat engineers, they may take in infantrymen, they may take in special operations forces, and they will show up for the first week of school, and that's called RAP week, and they do all sorts of physical fitness type testing, push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, 5-mile run, 2-mile run, the famous Darby Queen obstacle course, the water confidence course. And then
what is the famous obstacle course?
The Darby Queen is an obstacle course down in Fort Benning that's a mile in length, and has been around for quite some time.
Wow. And so it's pretty complicated and there's a lot involved.
It does take some effort. Yep.
Part of it is also stressing the person so that you can make decisions in really stressful situations too, right?
Correct. That's a big part of the school. And so part of how they do that is obviously through physical exertion. That first week I talked about, there's a lot of calisthenics and a lot of testing of exercises, but the school is physically taxing throughout, largely because you're walking very long distances over really long periods of time, and you're carrying a lot of weight with you when you're going. And so it will wear the body down as you go. In addition to that, they very closely regulate the amount of sleep you get. You will average between 2 and 4 hours a night, depending on whether you're in the field or whether you're in a classroom environment. And then they also regulate the amount of calories that you're taking into your body. At this point in time, it's generally about 2,400 calories a day. It has been more or less than that, depending on which era that you look at in the school.
With all that activity, though, that's not a whole lot of calories, right?
That's correct. It is not uncommon to lose anywhere from 30 to 60 pounds over the course of the school.
Wow. And then it sounds like an action movie, too. You're jumping out of planes. Isn't there a lot of other... I mean, there's a lot of different things that you're doing as part of this, too.
That's correct. I mean, the idea is to keep the stress up over the course of the entire school and to do it in as real world an environment as possible. And so you want to be able to use you talk about jumping out of planes. You want to be able to use the methods of insertion and extraction that you would use in combat.
In a real combat situation.
Correct.
Wow. And so this is a very elite group.
Generally, yeah. I would agree with that.
Because how many people normally go in, and how many come out successfully? It's usually a pretty small percentage, right?
At this point, the most recent statistics I saw for fiscal year 10 through fiscal year 14 was that right about 40% will graduate.
40%. Wow. That's very interesting. So once you make it through this, you become... I would guess it opens up a lot of opportunities for leadership within the Army and the military in general, right?
Well, the idea of the school is that they will take in the best people at units from across the Army, and they will make them better leaders. And so then they can send those individuals back to the units that they came from. And by providing those units with better leaders or improving the leaders that they already have, they make the Army better as a whole. And so the people who succeed in school tend to be people who would have succeeded anyways,
right.
But this is an additional tool in their toolbox that gives them a path to success in the future.
What effect did it have on you?
My circumstance is a little bit different than being in the General Army, because I served in the 75th Ranger Regiment. And so from that perspective, in order to get promoted within the unit, I was required to earn the Ranger tab to move from, at the time I think it was an E4 rank to an E5 rank. Generally speaking, if you had been in the unit for a certain period of time and you hadn't earned your Ranger tab, then you would be asked to find another job somewhere else within the military.
Wow. Well, we're going to go to the phones because we have people who want to react to this too, and you don't mind sticking around for that.
That's fine.
Okay, great. You can join us and call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to Randy in Sauk County. Randy, welcome to Central Time.
Yeah, hi. First of all, thank your guest for his service. And then my son is a Ranger. He graduated a couple years ago. And first thing I want to say is, the opinion I think they have of women serving is that they'd way rather serve beside a competent person of any stripe than somebody that's not competent. And going through that Ranger school is incredible. My one story I'll tell you, my son had his canteen of water, and to try and keep it thawed, he kept it inside his garment or whatever, his shirt or clothing, whatever he had. And one night, the canteen inside his garment froze solid. And so that's just one story I can tell you. And they do not let up any criteria. They take the best of the best to begin with, and then the excruciating pressure. If they slip up one thing, even at the end, they're gone. They get a very slim chance of repeating something they might need, and even then, only if they show promise. This is an incredible thing. These fellows, once they are at the graduation, they demonstrated the skill of one Ranger taking a squad of the enemy that was armed out, sort of hand-to-hand combat, and the skills he learned to do that, to take that fight to the enemy. And so, really, it was so incredibly inspiring to me to see that graduation. So hats off to your guest, and these people are just very, very committed to our defense.
Randy, thanks so much for that call. Travis West is a story like that. Does that sound like that could, the idea of the frozen canteen water?
It doesn't surprise me.
It's that intense.
They had an unfortunate incident back in 1996 where there were three Ranger students who died in the Florida phase from hypothermia. So this is a school that will definitely test you, and there have been some unfortunate incidents over its long and storied history. So the fact that somebody's water had frozen on them doesn't surprise me.
Wow. Well, we're talking about the changing landscape of women in the military on Central Time. We have time for one more call. Let's go to Derek. Derek, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, yes. I just want to say I was a former U.S. Army sniper, and I think the U.S. is kind of behind the times as far as women in combat roles. Historically, throughout other countries' armies, women have been either in the infantry. Some of the best snipers in history have been women, and I think that women would be a good role, definitely in the sniper community, And basically, if you can pass the test, then you're good enough to serve beside any elite force. And basically, that's my comment.
Okay, Derek, thanks for that comment. Really appreciate it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure. I think that that is sort of the general goal that the Army has set forth, is that they want to look at this issue more directly, and they are starting to open up military occupational specialties to women that haven't been open in the past. They haven't opened them all yet. The infantry isn't open, for example. There are certain forward observer positions that aren't open. The tanker positions aren't open. But there's a process by which they're going to examine that. Ranger School is a school, and it's intended to make individuals who attend it, you know, from any walk of life within the military, better leaders. And so this is just one small piece of that puzzle that they're looking at. There hasn't been any decision made on the rest of it yet, but it's certainly an issue that they're examining.
Now, it's my understanding that the two women success has been making news, but this is just the first step in integrating women into the Rangers in particular. Is that the case?
Well, they haven't made a decision yet with respect to whether they're going to allow women into the 75th Ranger Regiment, which is the current iteration of Ranger units that they have in the Army. Those decisions are going to be made in the future. They are going to, at least as of today, they're planning to run another iteration of women through the Ranger School in November, and there are various reasons for them wanting to do that. But the broader goal is to take a look at this issue on a more global scale and make sure that they're not rushing into anything. They've already started, I think it was mentioned earlier by Gail, that they've started to allow women into the combat engineer positions. So that was a big step this last year. And they have their version of Ranger School called Sapper School, so they went through the same process. And so the idea that most people have is that eventually they are going to open up the infantry to women. There is still a lot of questions, though, as to whether they're going to open up the special operations community or not.
Now, one thing that's interesting, too, within the Ranger community is that there seems to be, you know, people are happy about the situation, but also don't want to make a big deal about it because basically they earned it just like any other Ranger. Is that the case in terms of how people are reacting?
Well, I think that the reactions that I've seen have been all over the spectrum. There are some people who are very much in favor of it. There are some people who are very upset about it. The Ranger Association's position has been our job is to support the Ranger community as it's defined by the Army. And so if you earn a tab, you earn a tab, and we will and we'll give you our support.
Well, Travis, thanks so much for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me.
Travis West is a Madison attorney specializing in commercial litigation and veterans disability claims. He's also the president of the U.S. Army Rangers Association and a former Army Ranger.